This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Close your eyes, exhale, feel your body relax, and let go of whatever you're carrying today.
Well, I'm letting go of the worry that I wouldn't get my new contacts in time for this class. I got them delivered free from 1-800-CONTACTS. Oh my gosh, they're so fast.
And breathe.
Oh, sorry. I almost couldn't breathe when I saw the discount they gave me on my first order. Oh, sorry. Namaste.
Visit 1-800-CONTACTS.com today to save on your first order.
1-800-CONTACTS.
When you post hunting photos on Instagram, they get censored. When you post on Go Wild, you get virtual fist bumps from fellow hunters. When you buy gear on Amazon, you gas up a billionaire spaceship. When you buy gear on Go Wild, we donate to a camp that teaches kids to hunt, fish, and shoot. See the difference? Go Wild is a free social community built by hunters for hunters. Join today at downloadgowild.com, and I'll give you $10 just for setting up your account. And you'll keep unlocking Go Wild rewards as you share content, because guess what? We like hunting pictures. Join at downloadgowild.com or in the App Store.
You're listening to the Average Conservationist podcast, brought to you by Go Hunt and in partner with 2% for Conservation. Sign up today to become an insider at gohunt.com. 2% for Conservation's mission is to create an alliance of businesses and individuals that ensure the future of hunting and angling by committing their time and dollars to fish and wildlife. 1% of your time plus 1% of your money equals 2% for Conservation. 2% helps businesses and people pair with conservation causes to support things that fit what they care about. Whether you're into fishing, hunting, or just getting outdoors, 2% can help you not only start giving back to wildlife, but get certified for it. Getting 2% certified means you've made the same commitments as popular brands like Sitka, First Light, Stone Glacier, and Seek Outside in giving at least 1% of your time and dollars back to wildlife. But it's not just for outdoor companies. Breweries, contractors, coffee roasters, and even piano repair companies have earned 2% certification and stand out as leaders in their community for doing so. Businesses that are committed to conservation deserve your business when you shop. Learn more about 2% for Conservation at fishandwildlife.org. That's fishandwildlife.org. What's up, everyone? Happy Thursday. Welcome back to another episode of the Average Conservationist Podcast, and I'm your host, Marcus Ewing. Got a good one for you today. Today, we are joined by Callum Brown, and Callum is the president of 2% Certified Brown Dog Hosiery. we get to talk feet, socks, conservation today. Really, socks are one of those things that we all know the value and the importance of. But oftentimes it's one of those things that gets overlooked, and not only from a, you know, being in the field conservation being in the field and hunting and fishing standpoint of things, but really just in your everyday life. So we get to kind of walk through the process of, you know, what it looks like making some of their socks, you know, why conservation is so important to the brand, you know, really. with Callum as president, you know, what that looks like for him, you know, why the outdoors is important to him, the company, you know, their socks are made right here in the USA. The cotton is grown down there in the South. Everything is dyed right there as far as the colors there in their facility. And it's just a really cool outfit that they have. I actually picked up some of their socks and I'm just blown away. I mean, it sounds weird to say that you're blown away by a pair of socks, but if you've only ever been wearing, you know, kind of store-bought, I mean, I guess everything's store-bought socks, but if you've not been, you know, spending a little bit extra money on the socks that you're putting on your feet, you probably don't know what you're missing. So I highly recommend giving Brown Dog a look and seeing and checking out some of their really cool socks that they have, and they've got some new stuff that's coming as well. So I think you guys will enjoy that. So episode 77, Callum Brown, enjoy. Before that, I want to tell you about a new promotion that our friends over at Wild Rivers Coffee are running. So right now, through the holiday season, if you spend $75 or more, you are automatically going to get a free bag of coffee on them. So this is a great way for you guys to give, you know, the gift of coffee, accessories, you know, some of their cool mugs and shirts, all that good stuff, anything that the coffee lover in your life would like. This is a great opportunity to kind of spoil them and get them some Wild Rivers coffee stuff. No promo code is necessary for that. So once your cart hits $75 and you notice that, just throw an extra bag of coffee in there. And when you go to checkout, it'll show you that that bag of coffee is all set up for that it'll be free and it'll be part of their holiday promo. Now, if let's say you don't want to spend $75, always feel free to use the promo code. And this is all caps fish_wildlife. And you're going to save 10% off your order there. And at Wild Rivers Coffee, they're roasting in small batches, like I've mentioned before. So they assure you that their coffee arrives at its peak freshness. Wild Rivers is also a proud partner of 2% for Conservation, so they believe in preserving the wild places and wild things that bring all of us so much joy. And that's why proceeds from every sale that Wild Rivers makes is being donated back to conservation groups that are near and dear to them. So groups like Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, Ducks Unlimited, Backcountry Hunters and Anglers, and Trout Unlimited. So head over to wildriverscoffeeco.com, order your fresh roasted beans, and like I mentioned, get some handmade mugs, some sweet merch. Subscribe today and save 10% off your order. So head over to wildriverscoffeeco.com. All right, I'd like to welcome into the show today the president of 2% Certified Brown Dog Hosiery, Callum Brown. Callum, how are you, man?
I'm good, Marcus. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no, I'm excited. You know, with the podcast and talking to a lot of 2% brands and whatnot, you're the first, actually, I think you're probably the only sock company that is 2% certified. So I'm definitely excited to learn more. And obviously, we're just coming into November here, or actually by the time this releases, we'll be into November. And keeping your feet warm, keeping your feet looking nice, I mean, those are important things. So I'm definitely excited to learn more about the company.
Well, thank you. And you've reached a certain age when you get excited about getting socks for Christmas gifts. but they make great Christmas gifts.
You know, you are absolutely right. And I remember as a kid, you know, you get a pair of socks. Like there's almost like these certain things you can count on year in and year out, whether they're stocking stuffers, they're from a grandma or an aunt or that friend of the family, whatever it is, like, you can almost bet your last dollar that there's going to be some socks in your array of gifts. And as you get older, socks are important. They really are. I am very particular about my socks. I totally understand what you mean there.
That's right. Yeah. It's great stocking stuffer, but gosh, what are you going to get for your brother, or your dad, or your uncle that they're actually going to use, that you can spend $12 on or less than $20 on, and they're actually going to be excited about getting. So we love helping folks with that.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I don't know if it's over like the last gosh, maybe like 10 years, I would say, I almost feel like there's been a kind of like this emphasis, or like socks have become like a fashion thing, right? Like, you know, a lot of people are like kind of cuffing their pants so you can see some of the sock a little bit, you know, with, you know, kind of formal dress wear or business, you know, attire, stuff like that. Like, you know, a lot of times, like when you're sitting down, you can see, you know, the bottom half of your sock between your shoe and your pant there. And it's almost become kind of a fashion statement, a way to kind of, you know, show your personality or your interest a little bit. So, yeah.
That's right. Well, I'll ask you, I mean, when was the last time you wore a tie?
When was the last time I wore a tie? It's been a while. Right. It's been a while. I mean, probably a wedding of some sort in the past 4 or 5 years, I guess. It's been at least 3 years since I put a tie in, I can tell you that much.
That's right. And I think that's most of us. Unless you're going to a wedding or a funeral, you don't typically wear a tie. And for men, at least, that used to be how we showed off a little bit of flair and a little bit of style. And so socks have really become the new tie.
Yeah. And I feel like as things have progressed and there's kind of this younger generation kind of in the business forefront, style, you know, they grew up where style was, you know, a lot more important, I guess, or, you know, wanting to look your best. And yeah, socks have certainly become that new accessory, I guess, or staple. I mean, not an accessory, I mean, you need to wear socks, but, you know, it's become that thing that everyone wants to kind of outdo the next person sitting next to them.
That's right. That's right. That's right.
I mean, I remember on my wedding day, one of my groomsmen like gave me like a kind of a flashy pair of socks to wear, which is, I didn't even think about it at the time. And he's just like, no, he's like, you got to wear these socks. He's like, you know, they're awesome. I was like, all right, yeah. Cool. Like I'll throw on some, you know, purple and yellow socks. Like what do I care? Right.
Well, I tell you, that's one of the fun things, you know. I mean, business, especially recently, business can be such a challenge, and you got to look for the highlights. And one of the things we get most excited about is when we'll get an order in either through our website or through one of our customers, our dealers and retailers, and they're doing socks. You know, they're ordering 8 or 9 of the same socks because they're going to all the groomsmen and the groom that are in a wedding. And it's neat. That's a very small thing, but to be a small part of somebody's special day is cool. You know, we get excited about that. Try to do a little something extra when we ship that order out to them.
No, that's awesome. That's it's creating a connection, right, with your customers.
That's right.
You know, when you can't be there in person and talking to them, and going that extra step. I mean, that goes a long way with customers. You know, I've realized in my short time with, you know, my apparel company, The Average Conservationist, that, you know, I'll write a handwritten thank you note into every single order that goes out. And, you know, as long as it's feasible, I will continue to do it. But it's amazing how many people will reach back out afterwards and just be like, hey, thanks for the note. Like, you know, that really means a lot and everything. And it's, you know, the customers are important. And to develop a connection, I mean, that goes a long way with them in the future.
Well, you're making us look a little bad, Marcus. We don't we don't do a handwritten note to everybody, but we do care about each order and every customer and try to make it as personal as possible. But it's fun seeing folks enjoy something that you've created. You know, that's very satisfying. So
yeah. Well, don't feel too bad, because I'd imagine that you're probably selling more socks than I am T-shirts and whatnot. So it's all right. So let's kind of get right into it. So tell me about Brown Dog Hosiery.
Sure. So Brown Dog was... We've been in the sock business and manufacturing business for a while, but we were doing different types of socks. And one of the trends, like you mentioned and you've seen, is the popularity of socks and the ability to show off some fashion. But we didn't see anything that really appealed to outdoorsmen. The most of the socks that we saw One, they were made in China, and two, they were just real outlandish. The crazier, the better. And you know, I'm a pretty conservative guy, and it wasn't anything that I was going to wear. But I thought, well, gosh, if I had if I had a pair of socks with ducks on them or my dog on them, then that's something I would definitely want to wear. And we didn't see that out there, so we created Brown Dog Hosiery, and my Boykin Spaniel, Bo, was the inspiration for the brand. So we started it at the end of 2017, and have really had a lot of fun with it. It's growing every year. It's even through the pandemic, we've seen dramatic increases, and we're excited about it. So we like to say, they're great. They're fun patterns. They appeal to outdoorsmen. But the initial thought was, and why I was so excited to be part of 2% for Conservation, is I wanted to honor the outdoors, but the relationships created through the outdoors. And so what I hope people do is they get a pair of our socks and they have a deer on them, or they've got a duck on them. And while you're sitting in work and you're sitting in your office and the day is mundane, you look down at your feet and you go, gosh, I remember that time with my brother, or I remember that time with my dad. So just a little reminder of who we are, and think about good memories and good memories to come. And sometimes while we work so hard, so we can go out and enjoy those times when we're outside.
Yeah, no, there's certainly times in everyone's job, right, where they need a little pick me up. They need a little something to distract them for a minute to kind of get through that afternoon wall. And yeah, that's a great way to do it. So you started in 2017. Had you worked in manufacturing or with making socks prior to that?
Yeah, we did. Our parent company is Wilson Brown Sock Company, and we have another brand, Profeet, and we have another brand, WB Workwear, and then WB Originals, which we do custom socks and private labels. So we had been doing the Profeet and the Workwear socks, but we created this new brand of Brown Dog in 2017. So we've been around for a while, but this is our youngest brand, but the one that is growing the fastest and the one we're most excited about.
Yeah, and I think that kind of goes back to what we were just talking about before with the popularity of socks, a younger generation, and having different designs, a deer, a duck, a fish, the list goes on and on of different outdoor things that you can put on there. But I'd imagine that has probably been a real catalyst in the growth, is just that younger generation hitting the workforce, the younger generation of outdoorsmen, of outdoors women, all that, see the appeal of a nice pair of socks.
That's right. It has. And I think it's important that we do our part and everybody else does our part. I mean, this is we love to have people come in our meal and see everything that goes into it. And not only what goes into it, but the number of hands that touch it and the number of jobs that we're providing. And we try to love on our people and care for them, and that's part of our core values. So yes, they're fun. They're very high quality. We're using American grown cotton, and we're putting an art support in them and no toe seam. And so it's going to be a quality product. We take a lot of pride in that, but it's also American made, and so it's outdoor theme, but I think as patriotic people and wanting to see jobs come back to this country, especially manufacturing jobs, I think that's important to to come back to. So I think we've got, you know, there's some people, it's a small segment probably, that buy just because it's American made. I think most people are buying because they enjoy the patterns, but they're also getting a high quality product and something they can feel good about spending their dollars with. And so I think all of that's important, and all of it, we're trying to do our part.
Yeah, no, that's great. And, you know, keeping the jobs there in North Carolina, you know, where the cotton is, you know, or you're growing the cotton there in North Carolina. I mean, the fact that everything is American made is, I'm sure that, like you just said, it's certainly a huge selling point for a lot of people, you know, especially given kind of the landscape of things over the last, you know, 10 years, let's say. You know, people want to support, you know, local businesses, small businesses, American businesses as well. So, no, that's really cool that's, you know, really kind of part of your core values.
It is. And it's, you know, I think that it falls into we did a video. Our designer, our product development designer, fellow that works with us, he and I, we wanted to do a video. And so we said, well, let's go see our entire manufacturing supply chain, and let's film a little bit at each place. And within an hour and a half radius, we visited our entire supply chain.
Oh, wow.
So I think, as you know, which as outdoorsmen, you know, we really are the original conservationist, but there's a conservation story to that too. We've our carbon footprint is minuscule compared to a lot of sock companies out there, and I think where that's just a small piece, but it is a small piece to the overall picture, and is important. So we're proud of that.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right that, you know, manufacturing at times, I mean, maybe you think more like, you know, the Industrial Revolution, when it was just these big smokestack factories, you know, all over the place, and the pollution that it was causing that we, you know, didn't really quite understand at the time, and how people have become certainly a lot more cognizant of, you know, emissions, you know, air pollution, things like that. But to, I guess, to kind of take that one step further and, you know, from the conservation side of things, and realizing that, you know, minimizing your footprint is going to be better for the outdoors, which, you know, with Brown Dog, I mean, that's, you know, a lot of the customers that you're targeting are outdoorsmen, right? And, you know, to kind of have it come full circle a little bit, and for, you know, the customers to understand that not only are you giving back, but you're minimizing your footprint and doing, you're kind of attacking that conservation in twofold.
That's right. That's right. And I think it's that's all important, right? I mean, you know, we've a little bit self-serving, but we all want to keep the opportunities to pursue our outdoor passions for generations, and every little bit helps.
Yeah, absolutely. So, what is the process like making a sock? I mean, I've always been kind of curious, Earl. It's one of those things you don't really think about, right? It's just like you buy a sock, you put the sock on, you don't think about how it's made. But yeah, what does that process look like?
That's right. Well, first, I'd love for you to come visit us sometime. If you're ever in North Carolina, we'd love for you to come in. We love showing it off, because to me, which you've been in manufacturing environments, but the whole process is fascinating to me. But we buy yarns for our Brown Dog. We'll buy cotton yarns, dyed cotton. It's a ring spun comb cotton that's grown in the South, that's spun in Thomasville, North Carolina, dyed in Belmont, North Carolina, and shipped to us in our plant in Hall River, North Carolina. So we'll get those, and then we have, which socks require, we also have to have elastic yarns that go into it, and then the pattern yarns are a nylon yarn. So our designer, who's very talented, will create the designs, and he'll create them in a way that the machine can understand it. So He'll create the design and he'll send it to our technicians, and the technicians will save that onto a flash drive, put that in the machine, and then set the machine up. The yarns will be put on the machine as needed and what feeds they're going in, and then we start making the socks. And the socks are we get one brown dog sock every 4 minutes that comes off. So then after it comes off, then we send them, the socks will go to a washing and drying process, much like it would at home. It's just an industrial size washer and dryer. After they're dried, they will be sent to a boarding machine. The boarding machine it sets the size, and then it also acts as an ironing process, so to speak. So it'll make them nice and flat and neat, take out any wrinkles. Then the socks are paired, and then they are sent to another table to be packaged. And so they'll go into we have a header card that we put the socks in, and then put our 2% for conservation sticker on them. And then they get cased up and put in our warehouse ready to ship out.
Yeah, that's quite the process. So I mean, so when you talked about after they go into the wash, or you know, after they're laundered, and then you're like flattening them.
Right.
When the socks are actually stitched together, when they're actually made, are they doing the sizes right there, or does it come, I guess, afterwards when you're doing the flattening, like it's put onto like a mold to stretch it to get it to that certain size? I mean, how is that?
Sure. It's so a sock is made on a knitting machine is, it's circular knitting, so the socks are made in a circular pattern, and what you have on a knitting machine is in that circle there's a cylinder, and then we have individual needles. So on our machines you have 168 needles within that cylinder. And so socks on a sock knitting machine, the yarns get fed into that cylinder, and the needles go up, and there's a little latch on the needles. And so it'll create loops, and you're just like your grandmother may have knit a scarf or something at home. It's the same process, just on a bigger scale.
And a lot faster.
And a lot faster. And so you're creating those loops. Well, every time that's a loop. Every time that machine goes around one time is called a course. And so there's a program that goes onto the machine. And so the number of courses will create the length of the sock.
Okay.
And then that machine will tell it, okay, once you get to this many courses, you're going to switch, you're going to make a heel, and then you're going to make the foot. And then the number of courses that are in there will determine how long that sock is. And our technicians are very skilled, and they understand how much shrinkage you're going to have once it goes through the washer and dryer. So they'll make them, when they come off, they're going to look a little bigger than you would expect. And then they'll draw up some. And then once they go on that boarding machine, it really locks in and sets that size for it.
Okay. Yeah, I mean the kind of the whole process of from the design to loading the image into the machine, that manufacturing process sounds a lot to me like something that I used to be somewhat involved with like CNC machines, where you can you can load a program for whatever type of, you know, tool or molding or, you know, whatever it is that you're trying to make. A lot of the same applications just applied differently.
Sure. You know, this and this is a different conversation, and this doesn't apply just to us as manufacturers, but I think manufacturing has gotten somewhat of a bad rap the last 25-30 years. I can just speak personally for our operation, but I think this is probably true across any manufacturer. The days of going into a dirty environment where it's real loud and it's not a pleasant place to work, that those days don't really exist any longer. And the folks that we have working in our plant as technicians, these are highly skilled guys. These guys have to understand. They've got to understand graphics because they're coming over and they're looking at screens and seeing how the graphics line up. So they have to understand that part of it. They've got to understand computers because these machines are all computerized, and they've got to understand programming. When you look at the program for the machine, it looks like code that you would see on a computer program. They've also got to understand mechanics because you've got a lot of parts going on within that machine. So these guys, it's very highly technical. And that's one of the challenges for our industry is I think young people especially don't recognize the opportunity because with that ability and that highly technical ability comes higher pay, more opportunity, and honestly, it's a good work environment. Our folks love what they do.
You hit the nail right on the head with talking about manufacturing because, in my experience as well, the people running those machines and operating those machines, and granted, they were, you know, we're talking about two different things in terms of socks and the type of manufacturing that I was involved in. But I mean, yeah, they were some of the smartest guys that we had working in our facility. The fact that they have, you know, when they were adjusting things and, you know, they're trying to take, you know, like a mill off of something or just dust the top of, you know, this piece of metal because it doesn't quite fit right or something like that. I mean, those guys are artists with those machines. And it is super impressive to see. And there were times, I mean, and I was working with some, you know, some older gentlemen at the time, and you know, the things that it's funny, like the things they could teach me about that were things that I would have never probably ever knew about, learned about, come across, anything like that. And it's amazing if you have a little bit of an understanding about, you know, just manufacturing processes in general. I don't even think it needs to be specific to one thing or another. You have a much better understanding of almost how the world works, right? Especially if you start looking around your house, your car, your garage, all these different things, and it kind of paints the picture for you.
Marcus, I got to be honest with you. I think you're exactly right, and I think what it makes me realize is how dependent I am on other people. I tell you, I mean, I don't know how to do plumbing. I don't know how to do electrical work at my house, and in our plant, I can maybe turn the machine on, but that's about it. And I have such a great admiration for people that are able to do that. But I think that's the beautiful part about being in business, and is we're all been gifted with different things, and we're all part of a team, and no one job is more important than another. It's just a different function, and that's fun to me. Being able to do it together is really exciting, and I love growing up playing youth sports and being part of a team is great, and I still get to do it every day, and that's very rewarding.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. That team, if you know, for anyone who's grown up, you know, playing any type of organized sports like you just mentioned, when you get to a certain point and you know, unless you're one of the very, very few gifted individuals who gets to go on and play at a very high level, that team atmosphere, you lose that in a lot of regard. And to be able to find that within a company, within an organization, and everyone doing their part to spit out this final product, whatever it may be, it's a really cool thing to see. And it's really cool, especially when you get you know, someone who's making the sales to someone who's designing it to someone who's actually manufacturing it to, you know, putting the final touches on it to go into inventory or to ship out to stores. I mean, it's just a really cool thing to see them helping each other to, you know, reach your goal in putting out the best possible quality sock in this case that you can. Yeah, there's a certain level of what's the word I'm looking for here? Craftsmanship. You know, there's a certain level of being, you know, I want to say proud, but that's, I mean, you're certainly proud of the work that you're doing. But to see it all come together is a really cool thing.
It really is. And there's, you know, each of us have a responsibility to the other people in our organization. Cause if, you know, if the technician is not doing his job, then, that's going to make the knitter's job a whole lot more difficult. If the knitter's not doing her job, when it gets to the pairing process, it's going to be much more difficult. And then, if the guys in the warehouse aren't shipping orders correctly, that it all affects all of us. So we've got a responsibility to one another, much like a team, you know. And I guess I must have just a heart for being part of a team, because we're, you know, as we're talking about it, I think about that with my Boykin Spaniel, you know, that and he's the first. I've had dogs all my life, and I've had dogs I've hunted with, but never real successfully. this dog is, you know, I had somebody train him, and he's pretty good. I mean, he's not a national champion or anything, but to me, he's fantastic. But when we're hunting together, we're on a team, and that makes hunting totally different for me. When we're working together, even when we're training together. And I guess all of it ties together, doesn't it? It's doing life with other people is far more satisfying and rewarding than just doing it on your own. I wouldn't be happy just working independently all the time. That seems lonely.
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, It's a saying that I've heard a bunch of times, and it's very cliche and kind of sappy, but teamwork makes the dream work, right? I mean, that's kind of what it boils down to.
Right. That's right. It's a whole lot more fun accomplishing something when we all do it. You know, it's, I wouldn't want somebody to ever look at our company and think, gosh, look at what Callum did. I mean, it's like, hey, we did this in spite of me. I say that all the time. I just get in the way. But I'm good at hiring people smarter than me, which in my case is not that difficult to do, to find people smarter than me. But, you know, I think that's, you know, get the right people in, give them the resources, create the culture, and then get out of their way, you know, and I see that, maybe that's a bit of a cop out, but that's kind of how I see my role.
No, I think that's what makes a great leader is recognizing talent, and then, you know, once you get that person on board, giving them the autonomy to do what they're good at, right? And trust that they're, you know, going to put the company's interests ahead of theirs, that they're going to lead their, you know, maybe small team of people the right way. And yeah, no, I don't think it's a cop out at all. I think that's what makes a good leader, is recognizing talent and then allowing them to do what they're good at.
Right.
So with Callum, with Brown Dog, I mean, are you guys just producing like everyday wear type socks, or do you have socks that are maybe like thicker for maybe like, you know, actually getting out hunting, or, you know, like athletic type socks? You know, a lot of people like the no show type socks. I mean, what all kind of socks do you guys make?
Yeah, thanks for asking, Marcus. We do. We started because we saw that trend of being able to provide pattern dress casual socks, and that was really where we started. And we've had such a good response. We've started expanding the line. We've got a what I would call a golf sock. It's a tab sock that we're doing now, using the same ring spun cotton, cone cotton that we use in our dress casual socks, and then we're doing a no show that's below the shoe line, that we've done well with, and I'm really excited. We're coming out this fall or early spring with a fieldwear line. So we're using really nice merino wool product, and these socks. I've got a pair on right now with I'm wearing boots today, and with my boots, I always wear these socks when I can find them in my drawer. But they're going to be, I think, really well received. So we're going to do, our field wear will be kind of a lighter version for early season, if you're upland hunting, and then we'll have some mid season and then late season where you're going to wear with your waders. And I'm real excited about those.
Yeah, you're speaking my language there with the merino. I'm a big proponent of merino wool, really in kind of all aspects of hunting or fishing or anything like that. I mean, I think about, I was kind of first introduced to merino maybe 4 or 5 years ago as base layers. But then I stumbled upon, like, well, you can actually make socks out of it too. And yeah, I have not looked back. So with you guys coming out with some merino, that's exciting. I'm definitely going to have to give those a run.
Well, I'll get some pairs out to you so you can test them for us and let me know what you think.
Yeah, absolutely.
But merino, I'm a natural fiber guy. I love our cotton socks, but this merino is, it's a great fiber. It's really the original performance fiber. People think of it as just for warmth, which it does provide warmth, but it naturally regulates your temperature. So even on warmer days, it keeps your foot cool.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I think it was probably maybe 2 years ago or a year ago or so, somewhere there, where, yeah, I basically like cleaned out my sock drawer. It was like only merino, right? It's just so much nicer. Your feet don't sweat nearly as bad. And if they do, they don't stay moist and just like gross for the entirety of the day. So no, that's super exciting. And I'm sure, a lot of people that are just buying the casual wear socks are going to be really excited about those as well.
I think so. It's funny how we take socks for granted, most of us. And I had a friend come by the other day and I gave him he came by our office. I gave him a pair of socks, and he texted me when he got home, and he's like, "Man, I love these socks. Is this new technology?" And I'm like, "No, it's been around a long time." So you've been buying cheap socks for a long time is your problem. And I think he's a believer now in paying a little bit more for a decent pair of socks. It makes all the difference when you start wearing decent socks. You won't go back to just buying the cheap stuff.
Yeah, though there comes, I feel like in every man's life, there comes a point when they realize that they will pay for quality, right? They won't just buy socks because they're socks. Like, they want something that's going to last, that's going to be comfortable. And yeah, the older I get, the more I realize, you certainly get what you pay for.
That's right. Well, and especially as outdoorsmen, right? I mean, if you've ever been on a, if you've ever been standing in a duck blind with cold feet, or your socks keep sliding down on you, it takes away part of the enjoyment of the experience.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny you mentioned standing in a duck blind with cold feet. I literally just had a gentleman on. I recorded an episode with a gentleman who runs a waterfowl guide service up in Rhode Island, and we were kind of exchanging some stories. And I had a story from when I was out duck hunting when I was just a young buck. I mean, I was 13, 14 years old, and my waders had dry rotted, and I was standing in like inches of water. Yeah. So when you said cold feet in the duck blind, I was like, I don't think any pair of socks would have helped me that day.
Right. Right.
So you got to be,
if that was your early experience to duck hunting, you got to be a little bit crazy to go back out and do it again. Right.
Well, yeah. I mean, that was my first, on this trip, it was the first day with my dad, and they had dry rotted, and it's funny, whoever listens to this podcast is going to hear this story like 2 weeks in a row, but that's all right. And yeah, I was just belly aching, that I'm like, my feet are so cold. And he was like, you got to toughen up, like, it's getting to the good time of the evening. Like,
right.
I can't do this, man. Like, we can't walk back to the truck right now or anything.
Right.
So, and he kind of thought I was just, you know, being a little wimpy, I guess. And so we get back to the truck and we're changing, take my waders off, and, you know, you dump out 3 inches of water in the bottom. He's like, oh.
Okay.
Yeah. But luckily, we were able to find a pair the next morning. So my feet were good. But then one of my other buddies, there was another father son with us, and he tripped in some flooded timber and filled up his waders, and there was no toughing that one out. We had to get out of there.
Yeah.
So my dad never took me on those type of duck hunts anymore. We just stayed around the house.
Okay. Well, I'm sure, I hope you still remind him and hold that over his head, about that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So, you know, speaking of the outdoors, Callum, how was it that you were kind of really introduced to the outdoors?
Marcus, as long as I can remember, I guess my earliest memories, especially here in North Carolina, which I think all over the South, probably all over the country, dove hunting is a great first introduction for kids, just a big social event. And I can remember going out with my dad when I was probably 4 or 5 years old, and hanging around eating, we have, called a pig pick in here, somebody, cooking a hog and before we go out and hunt. I think those memories kind of got embedded with me, and just the camaraderie and being outside and enjoying it. And so I started with that. And then I think I probably graduated to taking a BB gun with me, and then single shot 410, and then, the 20 gauge, and you keep going up, and it's
the old natural progression,
a little rite of passage.
Yep.
Right. And it's been fun. I get to do the same thing now with my daughters. And that's really special for me to be able to pass that on. And so I guess that was the initial introductions. And then I just don't ever remember not being outside, not doing something. I'm a little older, and we didn't have all the distractions inside with all the video games and that sort of stuff. So, but I don't think I'd have been drawn to that anyway. I always wanted to be outside. So we were out fishing or playing in the woods. And I've got a passion for duck hunting. We would always take an annual trip around Thanksgiving down to the coast of North Carolina. It's just special memories. And I've created so many with all the men in my family. My father-in-law got me into trout fishing, and then I, with my stepdad and stepbrother, we've got a deer camp here locally. My life would be so different, and the relationships would be so less meaningful if I didn't have these shared passions. So,
yeah, the outdoors is, it's, I feel like a broken record, because I've said this, to so many guests, is it just has this really cool way of, I guess, kind of shaping the person that you end up becoming as an adult, right? I mean, all those little experiences just add up over time. And, even if there's parts of your life where you kind of tend to veer off track a little bit, or you can't spend the amount of time outdoors that you would like, it always pulls you back in. I mean, whether it's what I found is actually there's a lot of kind of big, almost traumatic events in your life that kind of open your eyes a little bit more, or force you to remember some things from when you were younger. And, 9 times out of 10, a lot of those early memories involve the outdoors, and it just strikes this passion in you. Or, if you're fortunate enough to maintain that fire throughout the entirety of your life, but it does something to you that, unless you've kind of grown up that way or experienced it, it's really hard, at least for me, to put into words.
It is for me too. I think that's one of the challenges that we have. It seems like, when I was growing up in our area, it seemed like everybody's dad hunted. or fished. And I don't think that's the case anymore. And just having the opportunity, I don't know if I hadn't have been introduced to it by my dad, how do you go about getting into it? And I think about all the things that I would have missed out on. So I think we've got a bit of a responsibility there too, to provide opportunities for that next generation, whether they're within our families or not, looking for opportunities to get kids outside, you know?
Yeah, no, you're absolutely
Kind of cliche, but I want people, I think as an outdoorsman, I'm sure you're this way too. I mean, there's kind of that progression too of at some point in time, it becomes not about me and what I want to harvest or what I want to catch. It's about seeing other people enjoy that and especially like I see it with my youngest daughter's really turned into an outdoors lady, which I love. And we could go hunt, and I'm happy to not even take a gun, just watch her and be with the dog. And that's it's really neat experience to get to that point.
Callum, you took the words right out of my mouth. You're absolutely right that when people get to that point, it becomes more about those around them and exposing new people to the hunting lifestyle. I have, you know, a small group of friends who I hunt with. And then I have another group of friends who, like, during the winter, I like to do a lot of skiing and stuff like that. So I have, like, that group of friends, and none of them have ever hunted a day in their life. And I've always, you know, I keep kind of talking to them, like, you know, if you guys want to try it, like, all you have to do is say the word, like, hey, I'd love to go deer hunting. It's like, I've got an extra gun. I've got plenty of camo. Like, I've got places we, you know, private land we can hunt. Like, you just have to say the word, right? And yeah, I think some of them are coming around to it. I think it's just they didn't grow up in it, so they've never had the opportunity. They don't even know where to start. But yeah, to see the joy that other people get, whether it's shooting their first bird, harvesting their first big game animal, catching their first trout on a fly rod, whatever the case is. I mean, those are big things, especially for young kids. I mean, it's an indescribable thing to be a part of.
Without a doubt. And, I think there's that, you know, misperception in a lot of respects. And I think as hunters and fishermen, we've kind of fallen into the trap. If you watch a show on the Outdoor Channel and it gets, if you watch that and you don't really know anything about it, well, if I didn't kill a monster buck, then I haven't succeeded. And I think we've sent that message in a real negative way. And I say all the time, like with trout fishing, if I've got a fly rod in my hand, that's just an excuse to go stand out in the middle of nature in a beautiful stream with mountains all around me. And it does something to it really, just being there, I can tell a difference in who I am when I come back from that, even if it's just an afternoon. It's, and I think that, I think we've been created to want that. And I don't think we're meant to be inside and around asphalt all the time. I think there's something. And so I think getting those people just to experience it, you know, like your friends that are skiing, if they enjoy being out there and that, I guarantee you they love being out in nature.
Yeah.
It's, and I'm kind of rambling here, but it's like when our black powder season starts this weekend here in North Carolina, in our part of North Carolina. And I tell people, and I wish I could say this more poetically, but you know, if you just walk into the woods, it's like you're an intruder into those woods. But when I go out before sunrise and I'm in that deer stand and then the woods start coming to life around me, it's like I become a part of that nature instead of an intruder. And I don't know if that's saying it the right way, But it's a really neat experience, whether I see anything or harvest anything or not. Just to be a part of that is really neat. And I think we need to get more folks out there to experience it.
Yeah, you explained that very well. I mean, in an example of slipping into a tree stand, before light, and being as non-obtrusive as possible, which is always the goal, right? Whether we're, especially when we're hunting, like we're trying to be as stealth as can be. And then when you're sitting in your, whether it's a box blind, a tent, a tree stand, whatever, just watching the world, Mother Nature, wake up. I mean, it's a cool thing. And I think, even sometimes I'm guilty of taking it, for granted, but there's certain mornings, I think, when, especially this time of year, when we're kind of getting into the rut, at least here in Michigan, that, you know that there's going to be a lot of movement. There's going to be a lot of activity. I mean, I've seen some of the coolest things I've ever seen in nature while sitting in a tree stand by myself, no one around, no phone in my hand, just being quiet and watching things. I mean, it's a very, very cool thing to watch Mother Nature do its thing.
Without a doubt. And, I think we're so, I think our minds need that too, right? I mean, we're constantly connected to something, and our minds need to just relax and kind of check out for a little while. And I think there's something to that about being outside too, and being forced to be still. I know that's one of the problems I have. There's always something to do. And so it's nice to go away and be forced to be still.
Yeah. So keeping with the outdoors and conservation, I mean, how was it, Callum, that you learned about 2% for conservation?
Honestly, I was, I'm a big fan of a lot of outdoor brands out there. And I stumbled across, I was on Duck Camp's website. I was looking for, I was actually looking for an upland bird vest, which I saw they just came out with one.
Yeah. I got that email this morning too.
but this was a few months ago, and I was just looking and I saw, and I thought, gosh, that's interesting. And so I hopped on the 2% for conservation website and started learning about it. And I said, this is neat. This is, I kind of had this thinking in my head of what can we do, and it was like, gosh, here it is. So that was my introduction to it.
Yeah, no, that's great to see. Brands that have recently come on board with 2%, being influenced or influencing other brands to then join 2%. I mean, obviously, we've had Duck Camp on the podcast. I have some of their stuff. I mean, it's a great company. But then for you to stumble across 2% because, you were shopping on their website or whatnot. I mean, that's kind of a really cool thing to see, learning about 2% through a brand that you're already supporting, and then in turn, getting your own business 2% certified.
Right. And so hopefully somebody will hop on our website and see the same and go, gosh, that's interesting. So, maybe we should be a part of that too.
Yeah.
We're not competitors. I mean, in business, and I think as outdoorsmen, sometimes we lose sight of, hey, this, I want this all to myself, but we're all in this together, and so we need to support one another. And I hope other sock companies will see it and want to be a part of it and want to help with the effort.
Yeah, because that's something Jared Frazier, the executive director of 2%, always says is conservation is not a competition, right? So, the more companies that want to get involved and give back their time and dollars, I mean, that's a win-win for anyone who enjoys any type of outdoor recreating.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So what are some of the organizations that Brown Dog is giving back to?
Yeah, so we've helped Coastal Conservation Association here in North Carolina. We've provided socks for their banquets, and we're members of it too. And And so that's one. Ducks Unlimited here locally, we've helped with several of their banquets. Delta Waterfowl, we partner with them with doing some socks and some give backs. Boykin Spaniel Rescue is one that we help. So we've really we've done that, and frankly, we were doing a lot of that prior to becoming a part of 2% for Conservation. And so we've continued to do it. The part that we hadn't done, and the part that I'm probably most excited about, is the volunteer time. Yeah. And we're still looking for the right organization to help with that. I've had some conversations, and I think there's opportunities there, but I'm excited to get our team to be able to participate in something, because kind of like what we've talked about, there's a lot of folks in our organization that are outdoors men and women, but most aren't. And so I'm excited to find something that we can do as a team building event and a way to expose folks to getting outside and see the value in it.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. Especially, you know, just given, I mean, 21 hours for a company is, I mean, that's, you know, if you get, you know, five or six people from your organization, I mean, that's a morning's worth of work, right? But,
that's right.
You know, it's certainly not tough, to attain the hours, but that's what I hear with a lot of people, that are kind of just getting involved with either 2% or really kind of immersing themselves in the conservation world, is they really enjoy that boots on the ground activity. They feel a lot more, I guess, sense of accomplishment at the end of a day when they've cleaned up a trailhead, they've pulled fence, they've, you know, cleaned up some type of watershed, or, you know, built wood duck boxes or whatever the case is. I mean, there's a list of things that you can do, but it's almost a little bit something more to hang your hat on at the end of the day.
Sure. Yeah, it feels, it's tangible, right?
Yeah, I mean, exactly.
It's nice to be able to actually do something physically to feel like you're giving back.
Yeah. So we're kind of getting to the point about getting close to wrapping things up here, but a few more things I wanted to kind of touch on. Where, I guess, Callum, where would you say that you, I know you grew up in the outdoors, but where would you say that conservation mindset really came from for you?
God, good question, Marcus. I don't know. I mean, certainly as a duck hunter, that message has been so clear as habitat decreased, and I think organizations like Ducks Unlimited and Delta Waterfowl have done such a good job of showing folks the need or telling that story. And so I guess maybe that just sort of got embedded in me. I'm not sure. I know, you know, I'm a dad. That's one of the great roles that I play in my life, and one I'm maybe most proud of. And I look forward to having grandkids one day, and hopefully, and being able to share time out there with them. And so I don't know. I think they're just, I don't know if I could reach back and say, well, there was one significant moment, more so than there's just I just have this feeling of, hey, I love this. I want to make sure, I want to ensure that it's still going to be around. So, so this is going to be important. And, so I don't know. I'm not sure if that answers your question or not, but I think it's just kind of always a sense that it's just what we're supposed to do.
Yeah, no. And that's, I hear that from a lot of folks, where it's just, it was never maybe necessarily talked about directly as, hey, this is conservation, or this is what conservation is. It's more or less, it's, you've been taught a conservation ethic without really knowing it. You were taught to do the right things, to leave things better than you found it, to treat the animals with respect, you know, all those different types of things. And I think that that message over time, like you just said, it just kind of becomes embedded in you, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's probably true of most outdoorsmen, isn't it? I mean, there is just kind of an unspoken code of ethics there. We pick up after ourselves, and we do leave things better than we found them. And you do, I think that's a great way to phrase it. You respect the animals. It's not, and I think that's hard to describe to somebody that is that's not an outdoorsman. And trying to put that into words too is difficult. But I think you're right. I think it's just that the community, the outdoors community, just is kind of impressed upon you.
Yeah. So I know you said you have black powder season that's just about on you in your area there. So do you have any, I guess, trips for the remainder of the year or maybe next year that you're excited about getting out on?
Gosh, I tell you, Marcus, I've been working quite a bit here lately, and so I'm not able to go as much. But I'm planning we've got black powder here, and some buddies and I have a house we rent in the eastern part of North Carolina, and so I'm excited. Our duck season comes in a couple weeks here, and so we'll be down there at our duck club, and I'm excited about that, and I've got a customer that's going to take me on a hunt in the Mississippi Flyway, which I've never hunted the Mississippi Flyway, so we're trying to work that out hopefully in December, and so that's that'll be it for this year, but yeah, hopefully there'll be more to come.
Yeah, no, that's exciting. You got to make sure you take those breaks. Stop turning on those machines there and get out in the woods.
That's right. One of these days, that's going to be my focus. But it's being a dad, and our youngest is she's a soccer player, and so we spend a lot of time. I'm either working or I'm spending time at the soccer field these days, it seems like, but all good stuff. But I'm excited about finding some extra time to get out there.
Yeah, no, I have two young kids, almost three and almost five. So we haven't, we've done like the little sports stuff, little club type stuff, nothing that really takes away from weekends or anything yet. But, they're starting to, at least my daughter, who's the older, she's starting to show a little bit of interest in the outdoors and just being outside. So I was able to take her on our first deer hunt last year, which lasted about 35 minutes before she was out of snacks and just was cold and was ready to go in. So, right. But she's already, talking about wanting to try to get out again this year. So it's all great. And yeah, sometimes you have to take a step back and, prioritize as much as we love the outdoors that, certainly family comes first.
Oh, absolutely. Then you change your expectations, right?
You do.
If she has a good time and wants to do it again, that's success.
Yeah, that's a win right there. So, yeah. Real quick, Calvin, before I let you go here, where can people find your socks at?
You can find them. We've got over 300 retailers and we've got a dealer locator on our website. That's browndoghosiery.com. And if you don't have a retailer in your area, you can buy directly from our website. And you'll see how to do that when you're on there too.
All right. Well, Callum, thank you so much for kind of giving me the inside scoop on making socks and, what Brown Dog stands for as far as a company and their values and everything like that. And just, hearing some stories about your upbringing in the outdoors as well. I really enjoyed it.
Well, Marcus, I did too. It was nice talking to you and I appreciate the opportunity to be on with you.
Yeah, absolutely. And if next time I get down to North Carolina, I'll be sure to look you up. And maybe depending on the time of year, we can catch a trout stream or, just do the tour of the factory there.
Let's do both.
Yeah, there you go.
Let's do it. All right. Great.
All right. Well, take care, Callum.
All right. Thank you, Marcus.
All right.
All right. Well, thank you again to Callum for joining me today on the podcast. I would also like to thank the partners that helped make this podcast possible. Stone Glacier, Go Hunt, Wild Rivers Coffee, as well as 2% for Conservation. Please be sure to go out and support the companies that support this podcast and, like I said, help make it possible. And if you'd like to learn more about 2% for Conservation, you can visit their website, fishandwildlife.org. And there you can see all the certified brands that have committed to conservation that you should support when you shop. I also encourage you to follow 2% on social media, where it's going to, where they are going to post only positive conservation-driven content in your feeds. So again, if you'd like to learn more about 2% for Conservation, you can look for them online on social media or at fishandwildlife.org. Thanks for tuning in this week, everyone. Hope you enjoyed the episode. Remember, stay safe out there, and conservation starts with you.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.